up. Her face turned up to mine. She dies. There's only silence when it happens. It isn't loud or struggled against or violent or anything at all. She just falls quiet. A certain type of quiet you know is endless as soon as you hear it. A quiet that muffles everything around it, turning off the volume of the world. The only thing I can hear, in fact, is my own breathing, wet and heavy and like I'll never feel lightness again. And in the silence of my breath, I look down the hillside. I see the rest of the wounded around us, their mouths open to cry out in pain, their eyes blank with horror still being seen even after rescue. I see Mistress Lawson running toward us with medicine too late, too late. I see Lee coming back up the path, calling out for his mother and sister, not willing to believe yet that in all this mess they're still not here. I think of the mayor in his cathedral, making promises, telling lies. I think of Todd in the mayor's hands. I look down at Corinne in my lap. Corinne, who never liked me, not ever, but who gave her life for mine anyway. We are the choices we make. When I look up at Mistress Coyle, the wet in my eyes makes everything shine with pointed lights, makes the first peak of the rising sun a smear across the sky. But I can see her clearly enough. My teeth are clenched, my voice thick as mud. I'm ready, I say. I'll do anything you want.
26. The Answer.
Oh, God.
Mayor Ledger keeps saying under his breath,
Oh, God.
What are you so upset about? I finally snap at him. The door ain't unlocked at its usual time. Morning's come and gone with no sign of anyone remembering that we're here. Outside, the city burns and roars. But a sour part of me can't help thinking he's moaning 'cause they're late with our breakfast. The surrender was supposed to bring peace, he says. And that bloody woman has ruined everything. I look at him strangely. It's not like it's paradise here or nothing. There's curfews and prisons and... But he's shaking his head. Before she started her little campaign, the president was relaxing the laws. He was easing the restrictions. Things were going to be okay. I stand and I look out the windows to the west, where smoke still rises and fires still rage, and the noise of men don't show no sign of stopping. You've got to be practical, Mayor Ledger says, even in the face of tyrants. Is that what you are, then? I say, practical? He narrows his eyes. I don't know what you're getting at, boy. I don't really know what I'm getting at, neither, but I'm frightened, and I'm hungry, and we're stuck in this stupid tower while the world falls to bits around us, and we can watch it, but we can't do nothing to change it, and I don't know what Viola's part in all this is, or where she is, and I don't know where the future's heading, and I don't know how any good can possibly come out of any of this, but what I do know is that Mayor Ledger's telling me how practical he's been is kinda pissing me off. Oh, yeah. And one more thing. Don't you call me boy! He takes a step toward me. A man would understand that things are more complicated than just right or wrong. A man trying to save his own skin surely would. And my noise is saying, try it. Come on, try it. Mayor Ledger clenches his fists. What you don't know, Todd, he says, nostrils flaring. What you don't know. What don't I know? I say, but then the door goes kerthunk, making us both jump. Davy comes busting in, rifles in hand. Come on, he says, shoving one at me. Pa wants us. I go without another word, leaving Mayor Ledger shouting, Hey! Behind us as Davy locks the door. 56 soldiers killed, Davy says as we trundle down the stairs on the inside of the tower. We killed a dozen of them and captured a dozen more, but they got away with almost 200 prisoners. 200? I say, stopping for a second. How many people were in prison? Come on, pig piss! Pa's waiting! I run to catch up. We cross the lobby of the cathedral and head out the front door. Those bitches! Davy's saying, shaking his head. You wouldn't believe the things they're capable of. They blew up a bunkhouse! A bunkhouse! Where men were sleeping! We exit the cathedral to chaos in the square. Smoke is still blowing in from the west, making everything hazy. Soldiers, both by themselves and in squads, run this way and that, some of them pushing people before them, beating them with their rifles. Others are standing guard around groups of terrified-looking women and separate smaller groups of terrified-looking men. But we showed them, though, Davy says, grimacing. You were there? No. He looks down at his rifle. But I will be next time. David! We hear. Todd! The mayor's riding toward us from across the square, moving so heavy and fast Morpeth's shoes are striking sparks from the bricks. Something's happened at the monastery, he's shouting. Get there! Now! The chaos is city-wide. We see soldiers everywhere as we ride, herding townspeople before them, forcing them into bucket lines to help put out the smaller fires from the first three bombs of last night. The ones that did take out the power station, the water plant, and a food store all still burning, because New Prentice Town's fire hoses are busy trying to put out the prisons. They won't know what hit 'em, Davy says as we ride fast. Who won't? The answer and any man who helps 'em. There ain't gonna be no one left. There'll be us, Davy says, looking at me. That'll be a start. The road gets quieter as we get away from the city, till you can almost believe things are still normal, unless you look back and see the columns of smoke rising in the air. There ain't no one on the roads down this far, and it starts to get so quiet, it's like the world's ended. We ride past the hill where the tower rubble lies, but don't see no soldiers going up the path toward it. We turn the last corner and come round to the monastery, and pull back hard on our reins. Holy shit, Davy says. The whole front wall of the monastery has been blown open. There ain't any guards on the walls, just a gaping hole in the masonry where the gate used to be. Those bitches, Davy says. They set 'em free! I feel a weird smile in my stomach at the thought of it. Is this what she did? Now we're gonna have to bloody fight them too, Davy whines. But I'm hopping off Angharad. My stomach all funny and light. Free, I think. They're free. Is this why she joined them? I feel so relieved. I pick up the pace as I near the opening, my hands gripping my rifle, but I have a feeling I ain't gonna need it. Oh, Viola, I knew I could count. Then I reach the opening and stop. Everything stops. My stomach falls right through my feet. They all gone? Davy says, coming up beside me. Then he sees what I see. What the? Davy says. The spackle ain't all gone. They're still here. Every single one. All 1,150 of them. Dead. I don't understand this at all, Davy says, looking around. Shut up, I whisper. The guide walls have all been knocked down till it's just a field again, and bodies are piled everywhere, thrown on top of each other and tumbled across onto the grass, too, like someone's tossed 'em away, males and females and children and babies, tossed away like they were trash. Something's burning somewhere, and white smoke twists through the field, circling the piles, pushing at them with smoky fingers, finding nothing alive. And the quiet. No clicking. No shuffling. No breathing. I gotta tell Pa, Davy says, already turning back. I gotta tell Pa. And he's off back out the front, hopping on deadfall and riding back up the road. I don't follow. My feet will only go forward, through them all, my rifle dragging behind me. The piles of bodies are higher than my head. I have to look up to see the dead faces flung back, the eyes still open, grass flies already picking at the bullet wounds in their heads. Looks like all of them were shot, most of them in the middle of their high foreheads. But some of the bodies look slashed, too, cut across the throat or the chest, and I start to see ripped-off limbs and heads twisted all the way around, and I drop my rifle to the grass. I barely even notice. I keep walking, not blinking, mouth open, not believing what I'm seeing, not taking in the scale of it, because I have to step over bodies with arms flung out, arms with bands round them that I put there, twisted mouths that I fed, broken backs that I... Oh, God. Oh, God, no. I hated them. I tried not to, but I couldn't help it. No, I could. I think of all the times I cursed them, all the times I imagined them as sheep, a knife in my hand plunging down. But I didn't want this. Never, I... And I come round the biggest pile of bodies stacked near the east wall, and I see it. And I fall to my knees in the frozen grass. Written on the wall, tall as a man, the A. The A of the answer, written in blue. I lean my head forward slowly till it's touching the ground, the cold sinking into my skull. No. No, it can't be her. It can't be. My breath comes up around me as steam, melting a little spot of mud. I don't move. Have they done this to you? Have they changed you? Viola? Viola? The blackness starts to overwhelm me, starts to fall over me like a blanket, like water rising above my head. No, Viola, no. It can't be you. It can't be you. Can it? No. No, no, it can't. No. No! And I sit up, and I lean back, and I strike myself in the face. I punch myself hard. Again. And again. Not feeling nothing as I hit. As my lips crack open. As my eyes swell. No, God, no, please. And I reach back to punch myself again, but I switch off. I feel it go cold inside me, deep down inside. Where are you to save me? I switch off. I go numb. I look at the spackle, dead, everywhere, dead. And Viola gone, gone in ways that I can't even say. You did this? You did this? Instead of finding me, and inside, I just die. And a body tumbles from the pile, knocking right into me. I scoot back fast, rolling over other bodies, scrambling to my feet, wiping my hands on my trousers, wiping the dead away. And then another body falls. I look up at the pile. 1017 is working his way out. He sees me and freezes, his head and arms sticking out from the rest of the bodies, bones showing through his skin, thin as the dead. Course he survived. Course he did. If any of them is spiteful enough to find a way to live, it's him. I run to the pile and I start pulling on his shoulders to get him out. To get him out from under the dead. All the dead. We fall back as he pops free, tumble into the ground, rolling apart and then staring at each other across the ground. Our breaths are heavy, clouds of steam huffing into the air. He don't look injured, though the sling's gone from his arm. He's just staring, eyes probably open as wide as mine. You're alive, I say stupidly. You're alive! He just stares back. No noise this time, no clicking, nothing. Just the silence of us in the morning, the smoke sneaking through the air like a vine. How? I say. How did... But there ain't no answer from him. Just staring and staring. Did you, I say, then I have to clear my throat. Did you see a girl? And then I hear, thump, ba-da-thump. Hoofbeats down the road. Davy must have caught his paw coming the other way. I look hard at 1017. Run, I say. You gotta get out of here, thump, ba-da-thump. Please, I whisper. Please, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, but please, just run. Just run. Just get out of here. I stop because he's getting to his feet. He's still eyeing me, not blinking, his face almost dead of expression. Thump, but a thump. He takes one step away, then two, then faster, heading for the blown open gate. And then he stops and looks back. Looks back at me. A clear flash of noise coming right at me. Of me alone. Of 1017 with a gun. Of him pulling the trigger. Of me dying at his feet. Then he turns and runs out the gate and into the woods beyond. "I know how hard this must be for you, Todd," says the mayor, looking at the blown-out gate. "We've come outside. No one wanted to see the bodies anymore." "But why?" I say, trying to keep the tightness out of my voice. "Why would they do it?" The mayor looks at the blood on my face from where I hit myself, but he don't say nothing about it.
"They thought we would have used them as soldiers, I expect."
"But to kill them all?" I look up at him on his horse. "The answer never killed no one before except by accident."
56 soldiers, Davy says.
75, the mayor corrects, and 300 escaped prisoners.
"They tried to bomb us here before, remember?" Davy adds. "The bitches."
"The answer have stepped up their campaign," the mayor says, looking mainly at me. "And we will respond in kind."
"Damn right we will," Davy says, cocking his rifle for no reason.
"I'm sorry about Viola," the mayor says to me. "I'm as disappointed as you are that she's a part of this."
"We don't know that," I whisper.
"Is she?
Are you?"
"Regardless," the mayor says. "The time for your boyhood is well and truly past. I need leaders now. I need you to be a leader. Are you ready to lead, Todd Hewitt?"
"I'm ready," Davy says, his noise feeling like it's being left out.
"I already know I can count on you, son." And there's the pink noise again. "It's Todd I need to hear from." He comes a bit closer to me. "You're no longer my prisoner, Todd Hewitt. We're beyond that now. But I need to know if you'll join me..." He nods his head toward the opening in the wall. "Or them. There is no other choice." I look into the monastery, at all those bodies, all those shocked and dead faces, all that pointless end. "Will you help me, Todd?"
"Help you how?"
I say to the ground. But he just asks it again. "Will you help me?" I think of 1017, alone now, alone in the entire world. His friends, his family for all I know, piled like rubbish, left for the flies. I can't stop seeing it, even when I close my eyes. I can't stop seeing that bright blue A. "Oh, don't deceive me," I think. "Oh, never leave me." But she's gone. She's gone. And I'm dead. Inside, I'm dead, dead, dead. There ain't nothing left.
"I will," I say.
"I'll help."
"Excellent," the mayor says with feeling. "I knew you'd be special, Todd. I've known it all along."
Davy's noise squeaks at this, but the mayor ignores it. He turns Morpeth to face the killing grounds of the monastery. "As to how you will help me," he says, "well, we have met the answer, have we not?" He turns back to look at us, his eyes glinting. "It is time for them to meet the ask." Part 5. The Office of the Ask. 27. The Way We Live Now.
"Don't let this period of quiet fool you," says the mayor, standing atop the platform, voice booming through the square from speakers set at every corner, extra loud to be heard above the roar. The people of New Prentistown stare up at him in the cold morning, the men gathered in front of the platform, surrounded by the army, with the women back on the side streets.
"Here we all are again." Davy and I are behind the platform on our horses, directly behind the mayor. Kinda like an honor guard.
wearing our new uniforms. I think, I am the circle, and the circle is me. 'Cause when I think it, I don't gotta think about nothing else at all.
Even now, our enemies move against us. Even now, they plot our destruction. Even now, we have reason to believe an attack is imminent.
The mayor takes a long, sweeping look across the crowd. It's easy to forget how many people are still here, still working, still trying to eat, still getting on with their daily lives. They're tired-looking, hungry, many of them dirty, but still staring, still listening.
The answer could strike in any place, at any time, against anyone, he says.
Though the answer ain't done no such thing. Not for almost a month now. The prison break was the last we heard from them before they disappeared into the wild. The soldiers who would have chased them killed while sleeping in their bunkers. But that just means they're out there, gloating on their victory and planning the next.
300 escaped prisoners, the mayor says. Almost 200 soldiers and civilians dead.
Up they go again, Davy mutters under his breath, talking about the numbers. Next time he gives this speech, the whole city'll be dead. He looks to me to see if I'll laugh. I don't. I don't even look at him. Yeah, whatever, he says, turning back.
And not to mention the genocide, says the mayor.
The crowd murmurs at this, and the roar gets a bit louder and redder.
The very same spackle who served in your home so peacefully for the past decade. The ones we had all grown to admire for their pluck under duress. The ones we had come to regard as our partners on New World.
He pauses again.
All dead. All gone.
The crowd roars some more. The deaths of the spackle really did affect the people, even more than the deaths of the soldiers or the townspeople caught up in the attack. Men even started joining the army again. Then the mayor let some of the women who remained in prison out, some of them even back with their families, and not even in dormitories. He upped everyone's food rations, too. And he started holding these rallies, explaining things.
The answer says it fights for freedom. But are these the people in whom you put your faith for salvation? The ones who would kill an entire unarmed population.
I feel a choke rising, and I make my noise empty space. Make it a wasteland. Thinking nothing. Feeling nothing. Except, I am the circle, and the circle is me.
I know these past weeks have been difficult. The food and water shortages. The necessary curfews. The power cuts, especially during the cold nights. I applaud your fortitude. The only way we're going to get through this is by pulling together against those who would destroy us.
And people have pulled together, ain't they? They obey the curfew and take their assigned amounts of water and food without fuss and stay inside when they're supposed to and turn off their lights after a certain hour and generally keep getting on with things even as it gets colder. You ride through the town. You even see stores open. Big lines of people outside them, waiting to get what they need. Their eyes looking at the ground, waiting it out. At night, Mayor Ledger tells me the townsfolk still grumble against Mayor Prentice, but now there's even louder grumbles against the answer for blowing up the water plant, for blowing up the power station, and especially for killing all the spackle. Better the devil you know, Mayor Ledger says. We're still up in that tower, me and Mayor Ledger, for some reason best known to Mayor Prentice. But I got a key now, and I lock him in when I ain't there. He don't like it, but what's he gonna do? Better the devil you know. I wonder why the only choice is twixt two devils, though.
I also want to express my thanks, says the mayor to the people, for your continued help in coming forward with information. It is only eternal vigilance that will lead us into the light. Let your neighbor know he is watched. Only then are we truly safe.
How long is this gonna go on? Davy says, accidentally spurring Deadfall / Acorn, who has to be reined back when he steps forward. I'm effing freezing over here.
Hang Herod moves from foot to foot below me.
Go?
Her noise asks, her breath heavy and white in the cold. Almost, I say, rubbing my hand against her flank.
Effective tonight, says the mayor. Curfew is pushed back by 2 hours, and visiting times for wives and mothers is extended by 30 minutes.
There's some nodding in the crowd of men, some relieved crying from the crowd of women. They're grateful, I think. Grateful to the mayor. Ain't that something?
Finally, says the mayor, it is my pleasure to announce that building work has been completed on a new ministry, one that will keep us safe from the threat of the answer, a building where no secret may be kept, where anyone who tries to undermine our way of life will be re-educated into understanding our ideals, where our future will be secured against those who would steal it from us. The mayor pauses to give his words maximum impact. Today we launch the Office of the Ask.
Davy catches my eye and taps the sharp silver A sewn on the shoulders of our new uniforms. The A that the mayor picked special 'cause it's got all kinda associations, don't it? Me and Davy are now officers of the Ask. I don't share his excitement, but that's 'cause I don't feel nothing much at all no more. I am the circle, and the circle is me.
Good speech, Pa,
Davy says.
Long.
It wasn't for you, David, the mayor says, not looking at him. The three of us are riding down the road to the monastery, though it ain't the monastery no more. Everything is ready, I trust, the mayor says, barely turning his head. I'd hate to be made a liar of.
It ain't gonna get less ready if you keep asking,
Davy mumbles. The mayor turns to him, a deep frown on his face, but I speak before anyone gets slapped with noise. It's as ready as it can be, I say, my voice flat. The walls and roof are up, but the inside...
No need to sound so morose, Todd, the mayor says.
The inside can follow in due course. The building is up. That's all that's important. They can look at the outside, and they can tremble. He's got his back to us now, riding on ahead, but I can feel him smile at they can tremble.
Are we gonna have a part in it?
Davy asks, noise still stormy. Or are you just gonna find a way for us to be babysitters again? The mayor turns Morpeth in the road, blocking our way.
Do you ever hear Todd complain this much?
He asks.
No,
Davy says, sullen.
But he's just, you know, Todd.
The mayor raises his eyebrows.
And? And I'm your son.
The mayor walks Morpeth toward us, making Angharad step back.
Submit,
Morpeth says.
Lead,
Angharad says in answer, lowering her head. I stroke her mane, untangling a bit with my fingers, trying to calm her down.
Let me tell you something interesting, David,
the mayor says, looking hard at him. The officers, the army, the townspeople, they see the two of you riding together in your new uniforms, with all your new authority, and they know that one of you is my son. He's almost side by side with Davy now, pushing him back down the road. And as they watch you ride by, as they watch you go about your business, do you know? They often guess wrong. They often guess wrong as to which one of you is my own flesh and blood.
The mayor looks over to me.
They see Todd, with his devotion to duty, with his modest brow and his serious face, with his calm exterior and mature handling of his noise, and they never even consider that his loud, sloppy, insolent friend is the one who's actually my son.
Davy's looking at the ground, his teeth clenched, his noise boiling.
He don't even look like you.
I know, says the mayor, turning Morpeth back down the road. I just thought it was interesting how often it happens.
We keep on riding, Davy in a silent red storm of noise lagging behind.
I keep Angharad in the middle with the mayor clopping on ahead.
Good girl, I murmur to her.
Boy cold,
she says back. Then she thinks,
Todd.
Yeah, girl, I whisper twixt her ears. I'm here. I've taken to hanging around her stable at the end of the day, taken to unsaddling her myself, and brushing her mane, and bringing her apples to eat. The only thing she needs from me is assurance that I'm there, proof I haven't left the herd. And as long as that's true, she's happy and calls me Todd. And I don't have to explain myself to her, and I don't have to ask her nothing, and she don't need nothing from me. Except that I don't leave her. Except that I don't never leave. My noise starts getting cloudy, and I think it again. I am the circle, and the circle is me. The mayor looks back at me, and he smiles. Even though we got uniforms, we ain't in the army. The mayor was particular about that. We don't got ranks except officer, but the uniform and the A on its sleeve is enough to keep people out of our way as we ride toward the monastery. Our job till now has been guarding the men and women who are still in prison, though it's mostly women. After the prisons were busted into and burned down, the prisoners left over were moved to a former house of healing down by the river. Guess which one? For the past month, Davy and I have been escorting work crews of prisoners back and forth from the house of healing to the monastery to finish the work the Spackle started. Women and men working faster than Spackle, I guess. The mayor didn't ask us to supervise the building this time, something I'm grateful for. When everyone's in for the night back at the House of Healing, Davy and I ain't got much to do except ride our horses round the building, doing what we can so as not to hear the screams coming from inside. Some of the ones still in prison, see, are from the Answer. The ones the mayor caught the night of the prison break. We don't never see them. They don't get sent out with the work parties. They just get asked all day long till they answer with something. So far, all the mayor's got from them is the location of a camp around a mine, which was deserted by the time the soldiers got there. Anything else useful is slow in coming. There are others in there, too, found guilty of helping the Answer or whatever. But the ones who said they saw the Answer kill the Spackle and saw women writing the A on the wall, those prisoners are the ones who've been set free and sent back to their families, even though there ain't really no way they could have been there to see it. The others? Well, the others keep being asked till they answer. Davy talks loud to cover the sounds we hear while the asking's going on inside, trying to pretend it don't bother him when any fool could see it does. I just keep myself in myself, closing my eyes, waiting for the screaming to stop. I have an easier time than Davy, 'cause like I say, I don't feel nothing much, not no more. I am the circle, and the circle is me. But today, everything's supposed to change. Today, the new building is ready, or ready enough, and Davy and I are gonna guard it instead of the House of Healing, while supposedly learning the business of asking. Fine. It don't matter. Nothing matters. The Office of the Ask, the mayor says as we round the final corner. The front wall of the monastery has been rebuilt, and you can see the new building sticking over the top, a big stone block that looks like it'd happily knock your brains out if you stood too close. And on the newly built gate, there's a great, shiny, silver A to match the ones on our uniforms. There are guards in army uniforms on either side of the door. One of them is Ivan, still a private, still sour-faced as anything. He tries to catch my eye as I ride up, his noise clanging loud with things he don't want the mayor to hear, I reckon. I ignore him. So does the mayor. Now we find out when the real war begins, the mayor says. The gate opens, and out walks the man in charge of all the asking. The man charged with finding out where the Answer are hiding, and how best to track them down. Our newly promoted boss.
Mr. President? He says.
Captain Hammer, says the mayor.
28. Soldier. Quiet, Mistress Coyle says, a finger to her lips. The wind has died, and you can hear our footsteps snapping the twigs on the ground at the foot of the trees. We stop, ears open for the sounds of soldiers marching. Nothing. More nothing. Mistress Coyle nods and continues moving down the hill and through the trees. I follow her. It's just the two of us. Me and her, and the bomb strapped to my back. The rescue saved 132 prisoners. Of these, 29 died either on the way to or back in the camp. Corinne was number 30. There are others unrescued, like poor old Mrs. Fox, whose fates I'm probably never going to know. But Mistress Coyle estimates we killed at least 20 of their soldiers. Miraculously, only 6 members of the Answer on the original raid were killed, including Thea and Mistress Wagner. But another 5 were captured, and there was no possibility they wouldn't be tortured for information about where the Answer was hiding. So we moved, in a hurry. Even before many of the injured could walk for themselves, we loaded up supplies and weapons, anything and everything we could carry on carts, horses, the backs of the able-bodied, and we fled into the woods, keeping moving all through the night, the next day, and the night after that until we came to a lake at the base of a rock cliff, where at least we might have water and some shelter. "It'll do," Mistress Coyle said. We pitched camp along the shore, and then we began our preparations for war. She makes a movement with the palm of her hand, and I instantly duck below some shrubs. We've reached a narrow drive up from the main road, and I can hear a troop of soldiers noisily moving away from us in the distance. Our own supply of cure is getting lower by the day, and Mistress Coyle has set up a rationing system, but since the raid, it's too dangerous for any man, with or without noise, to go into town anyway, which means they can no longer ferry us in hidden compartments to easy targets. We have to take a cart to a certain point outside of town and walk the rest of the way. Escaping will be more difficult, so we'll just have to be more careful. "Okay," Mistress Coyle whispers. I stand. The moons are our only light. We cross the road, keeping low. After we moved to the lake, after the rescue of all those people, after the death of Corinne, after I joined the Answer, I began to learn things. Basic training, Mistress Coyle called it. Led by Mistress Braithwaite and done not only for me but for every patient who improved enough to join in, which was most of them, more than you'd think. We were taught how to load a rifle and fire it, basics of infiltration, nighttime maneuvers, tracking, hand communications, code words, how to wire and set a bomb. "How do you know how to do this?" I asked one night at dinner, my body weary and aching from the running and diving and carrying we'd done all throughout the day. "You're healers. How do you know how to run an army?" Mistress Coyle said. "You forget about the Spackle War."
"We were our own division," Mistress
Forth said, down the table, snuffling up some broth. The mistresses talked to me now that they could see how hard I was training.
"We weren't very popular,"
giggled Mistress Lawson, across from her.
"We didn't like how some of the generals were waging the war," Mistress Coyle said to me. "We thought an underground approach would be more effective."
"And since we didn't have noise," said Mistress Nadari, down the table, "we could sneak into places, couldn't we?"
"The men in charge didn't think we were the answer to their problem, though," Mistress Lawson said, still giggling.
"Hence the name," Mistress Coyle said.
"And when the new government was formed and the city rebuilt, well," Mistress Forth said, "it wouldn't have been sensible not to keep important materials available should the need ever arise."
"The explosives in the mine," I said, realizing. "You hid them there years ago."
"And what a good decision it turned out to be," Mistress Lawson said. "Nicola Coyle always was a woman of foresight."
I blinked at the name Nicola, as if it was hardly possible that Mistress Coyle had a first name.
"Yes, well," said Mistress Coyle, "men are creatures of war. It's only prudent to remember that."
Our target is deserted, as we expect it to be. It's small but symbolic, a well above a tract of farmland east of the city. The well and the apparatus above it only bring water for the field below, not any huge system or set of buildings.
But if the city goes on allowing the mayor to imprison, torture, and kill, then the city won't eat. It's also a good way away from the city center, so no chance of me seeing Todd. Which I won't argue about. For now. We've come up the cut-off road, keeping to the ditch beside it, holding our breaths as we move past the sleeping farmhouse, a light still on in the upper floor, but it's so late it can only be for security. Mistress Coyle makes another hand signal, and I move past her, ducking under a wire carriage of laundry, hung outside to dry. I trip on a child's toy scooter, but manage to keep my balance. The bomb's supposed to be safe, supposed to be impervious to any kind of jostling or shaking. But I let out a breath and keep on toward the well. Even in the weeks when we hid, when we didn't approach the city at all, the weeks when we laid low and kept quiet, training and preparing, even then a few escapees from the city found us. "They're saying what?" Mistress Coyle said. "That you killed all the spackle," the woman said, pressing the poultice against her bleeding nose. "Wait," I said. "All the spackle are dead?" The woman nodded. "And they're saying we did it," Mistress Coyle repeated. "Why would they say that?" I asked. Mistress Coyle stood and looked out across the lake. "Turn the city against us. Make us look like the bad guys." "That's exactly what he's saying," the woman said. I found her on a training run through the woods. She'd tripped down a rocky embankment, managing to break only her nose. "There's rallies every other day," she said. "People are listening." "I'm not surprised," Mistress Coyle said. I looked up at her. "You didn't do it, did you? You didn't kill them?" Her face could have lit a match. "Exactly what sort of people do you think we are, my girl?" I kept her gaze. "Well, I don't know, do I? You blew up a bunker, you killed soldiers." But she just shook her head, though I didn't know if that was an answer. "You're sure you weren't followed?" she asked the woman.
"I was wandering in the woods for 3 days," she said. "I didn't even find you."
She pointed at me.
"She found me."
"Yes," Mistress Coyle said, eyeing me. "Viola's useful that way." "There's a problem at the well."
"It's too close to the house," I whisper.
"It's not," Mistress Coyle whispers back, going behind me and unzipping my pack.
"Are you sure?"
I say.
"The bombs you blew up the tower with were..."
"There are bombs and there are bombs." She makes a few adjustments to the contents of my pack, then turns me around to face her.
"Are you ready?"
I look over to the house, where anyone could be sleeping inside. Women, innocent men, children. I won't kill anyone, not unless I have to. If I'm doing this for Todd and Corinne, well then...
"Are you sure?"
I ask.
"Either you trust me, Viola, or you do not." She tilts her head. "Which will it be?"
The breeze has picked up again, and it blows a bit of the sleeping noise of New Prentice Town down the road. One indefinable, snuffling, snoring roar, almost quiet, if such a thing could be. Todd, somewhere in it all. Not dead, no matter what she says.
"Let's get this done," I say, taking off the pack.
The rescue wasn't a rescue for Lee. His sister and his mother weren't among the prisoners saved or the prisoners who died. It's possible they were in the one prison the answer didn't manage to break. But...
"Even if they're dead,"
he said one night as we sat on the shore of the lake, throwing in stones, aching again after yet another long day's training.
"I just want to know."
I shook my head. "If you don't know, then there's still a chance."
"Knowing or not knowing doesn't keep them alive."
He sat down, close to me again.
"I think they're dead. I feel like they're dead."
"Lee."
"I'm going to kill him."
His voice was that of a man making a promise, not a threat.
If I get close enough, I swear to you.
The moons rose over us, making two more of themselves in the surface of the lake. I threw in another stone, watching it skip across the moon's reflections. The camp gave a low bustle in the trees behind us and up the bank. You could hear noise here and there, including a growing buzz from Lee, not lucky enough to qualify for Mistress Coyle's ration.
"It's not what you think it's going to be like," I said quietly. "Killing someone?"
I nodded.
"Even if it's someone who deserves it? Someone who will kill you if you don't kill them, even then, it's not what you think."
There was more silence until he finally said,
"I know."
I looked over at him.
"You killed a soldier."
He didn't answer, which was its own answer.
"Lee?"
I said. "Why didn't you tell—"
"Because it's not what you think it's going to be like, is it?"
he said.
"Even if it's someone who deserves it."
He threw another stone into the lake.
We weren't resting our shoulders on each other. We were a space apart. "I'm still going to kill him," he said.
I peel off the backing paper and press the bomb into the side of the well, sticking it there with a glue made from tree sap. I take two wires out of my pack and twist the ends on two more wires already sticking out of the bomb, hooking two together and leaving one end dangling. The bomb is now armed. I take a small green number pad from the front pocket of my pack and twist the end of the dangling wire around a point at the end of the pad. I press a red button on the pad, and then a gray one. The green numbers light up. The bomb is now ready for timing. I click a silver button until the digits count up to 30-00. I press the red button again, flip over the green pad, slide one metal flap into another, then press the gray button one more time. The green numbers immediately change to 2959, 2958, 2957. The bomb is now live. "Nicely done," Mistress Coyle whispers. "Time to go." And then after almost a month of hiding in the forest, waiting for the prisoners to recuperate, waiting for the rest of us to train, waiting for a real army to have life breathed into it, there came a night when that waiting was over. "Get up, my girl," Mistress Coyle said, kneeling at the foot of my cot. I blinked myself awake. It was still pitch black. Mistress Coyle's voice was low so as not to wake the others in the long tent.
"Why?"
I whispered back.
"You said you'd do anything."
I got up and went out into the cold, hopping to get my boots on while Mistress Coyle readied a pack for me to wear.
"We're going into town, aren't we?" I said, tying my laces. "She's a genius, this one," Mistress Coyle muttered into the pack.
"Why tonight? Why now?" She looked up at me.
"Because we need to remind them that we're still here."
The pack rests empty against my back. We cross the yard and sidle up to the house, stopping to listen for anyone stirring. No one does. I'm ready to go, but Mistress Coyle is leaning back from the outer wall of the house, looking at the white expanse of it.
"This should do fine," she says.
"For what?" I look around us, spooked now that there's a timer running.
"Have you forgotten who we are?"
She reaches into a pocket of her long healer's skirt, still worn even though trousers are so much more practical. She pulls out something and tosses it to me. I catch it without even thinking.
"Why don't you do the honors?" she says.
I look in my hand. It's a crumbling piece of blue charcoal, pulled from our wood fires, the remains of the reacher trees we burn to keep warm. It smears dusty blue across my hand, across my skin. I look at it for a moment longer.
"Tick-tock," says Mistress Coyle.
I swallow. Then I raise the charcoal and make 3 quick slashes against the white wall of the house. A, looking back at me, by my hand. I find myself breathing heavily. When I look round, Mistress Coyle's already off down the ditches of the drive. I hurry after her, keeping my head low. 28 minutes later, just as we reach our cart, deep in the woods, we hear the boom. Congratulations, soldier, Mistress Coyle says as we set off back to camp. You have just fired the first shot of the final battle.
29. The Business of Asking. The woman is strapped against a metal frame, her arms out behind her and up, each tied at the wrist to a bar of the frame. It looks like she's diving into a lake, except for the watery blood on her face.
She's gonna get it now, Davy says,
but his voice is oddly quiet.
One more time, my female friend, Mr. Hammer says, walking behind her. Who set the bomb?
The first bomb since the prison break went off last night, taking out a well and pump on a farm. It's begun.
I don't know,
says the woman, her voice strangled and coughing.
I haven't left Haven since...
Haven't left where? Mr. Hammer says.
He grabs a handle on the frame and tips the whole thing forward, plunging the woman face first into a tub of water, holding her there as she thrashes against her bindings.
I look down at my feet.
Raise your head, please, Todd, the mayor says, standing behind us.
How else will you learn?
I raise my head. We're on the other side of a 2-way mirror, in a small room, looking in on the arena of the Ask, which is just a room with high concrete walls and similar mirrored rooms off of each side. Davy and I sit next to each other on a short bench, watching. Mr. Hammer pulls up the frame. The woman rises out of the water, gasping for air, straining against where her arms are tied.
Where do you live?
Mr. Hammer's got his smile on, that nasty thing that hardly ever leaves his face.
New Prentice Town, the woman gasps. New Prentice Town.
Correct, says Mr. Hammer,
then watches as the woman coughs so hard she throws up down her front. He takes a towel from a side table and gently wipes the woman's face, cleaning as much of the vomit off her as he can. The woman's still gasping, but her eyes don't leave Mr. Hammer as he cleans her. She looks even more frightened than before.
Why's he doing that?
Davy says.
Doing what?
The mayor says.
Davy shrugs.
Being, I don't know, kind.
I don't say nothing. I keep my noise clear of the time the mayor put bandages on me, all those months ago. I hear the mayor shift his stance, rustling himself to cover up my noise so Davy don't hear it. We're not inhuman, David. We don't do this for our own joy. I look out at Mr. Hammer, look at his smile. Yes, Todd, the mayor says. Captain Hammer does show a certain glee that is perhaps unseemly, but you have to admit, he does get results.
Are you recovered?
Mr. Hammer asks the woman. We can hear his voice over a microphone system pumped into the room. It separates it oddly from his mouth, making it seem like we're watching a vid rather than a real thing.
I'm sorry to have to keep asking you, Mr. Hammer says. This can end as quick as you want.
Please, the woman says in a whisper. Please, I don't know anything.
And she starts to weep.
Christ,
Davy says under his breath. The enemy will try many tricks to win our sympathy, says the mayor. Davy turns to him.
So this is a trick?
Almost certainly. I keep watching the woman. It don't look like a trick. I am the circle, and the circle is me, I think. Just so, says the mayor.
You're in control here, says Mr. Hammer.
starting round the woman again. Her head turns to try and follow him, but there ain't much movement from where she's strapped to the frame. He hovers just outside of her vision, to keep her off balance, I'm guessing. 'Cause, of course, Mr. Hammer ain't got no noise. Me and Davy do, though. Only muffled sounds, Todd, the mayor says, reading my asking. Do you see the metal rods coming out of the frame by the sides of her head? He points. Davy and I see them. They play a whining buzz into her ears at all times, the mayor says. Muffles any noise she might hear from the observation rooms. Keeps her focused on the officer of the ask. Wouldn't want 'em hearing what we already know, Davy says. Yes, the mayor says, sounding a little surprised. Yes, that's it exactly, David. Davy smiles, and his noise glows a bit. We saw the A written in blue on the side of the farmhouse, Mr. Hammer says, still hovering behind the woman. The bomb was the same as all the others planted by your organization.
It's not my organization, says the woman,
but Mr. Hammer continues like she didn't even speak. And we know you've worked in that field for the past month.
So have other women,
she yells, sounding more and more desperate.
Milla Price? Kasia McRae? Martha Sutpen?
So they were in on it, too?
No, just that...
'Cause Mrs. Price and Mrs. Sutpen have already been asked.
The woman stops, her face suddenly even more frightened. Davy chuckles next to me.
Got you,
he whispers. But I can hear a weird sense of relief in him. I wonder if the mayor hears it, too.
What did...
the woman says, stopping, and then having to go on.
What did they say?
They said you tried to get him to help, Mr. Hammer says calmly. Said you tried to enlist him as terrorists, and when they refused, you said you'd carry on alone.
The woman goes pale, her mouth falling open, her eyes wide in disbelief. That's not true, is it? I say. My voice level. I am the circle, and the circle is me. He's trying to make her confess by pretending he don't need her to.
Excellent, Todd, says the mayor. You may end up having a flair for this.
Davy looks first at me, then at his pa, then at me again, askings left unsaid.
We already know you're responsible, Mr. Hammer says. We already have enough to stick you in prison for the rest of your life.
He stops in front of her.
I stand before you as your friend, he says. I stand before you as the one who can save you from a fate worse than prison.
The woman swallows and looks like she's going to vomit again.
But I don't know anything, she says weakly. I just don't know.
Mr. Hammer sighs.
Well, that's a real disappointment, I must say.
He walks behind her again, grabs the frame, and plunges her into the water, and holds her there. And holds her there. He looks up to the mirror where he knows we're watching. He smiles at us, and still holds her there. The water churns with the limited thrashing she can do. I am the circle, and the circle is me, I think, closing my eyes. Open them, Todd, the mayor says. I do. And still Mr. Hammer holds her there. The thrashing gets worse. So hard the binds on her wrist start to bleed.
Jesus,
Davy says under his breath. He's gonna kill her, I say, voice still low. It's only a vid. It's only a vid. Except it ain't. Feeling nothing. 'Cause I'm dead. I'm dead. The mayor leans past me and presses a button on the wall. I should think that's enough, Captain, he says, his voice carrying into the arena of the ask. Mr. Hammer raises the frame out of the water, but he does it slowly. The woman hangs from it, chin down on her chest, water pouring from her mouth and nose.
He killed her,
Davy says.
No, says the mayor.
Tell me, Mr. Hammer says to the woman, and this will all stop. There's a long silence, longer still, and then a croaking sound from the woman.
What was that? Mr. Hammer says.
I did it,
croaks the woman.
No way, says Davy.
What did you do? Mr. Hammer asks.
I set the bomb,
the woman says, her head still down.
And you tried to get your work sisters to join you in a terrorist organization?
Yes,
the woman whispers.
Anything.
Ha!
Davy says, and again there's relief. Relief that he tries to cover.
She confessed! She did it!
No, she didn't, I say, still looking at her, still not moving on the bench.
What?
Davy says to me.
She's making it up,
I say, still looking through the mirror. So he'll stop drowning her. I move my head just slightly to show I'm talking to the mayor. Ain't she? The mayor waits before answering. Even without noise, I can tell he's impressed. Ever since I started with the circle, things have taken on the worst kind of clarity. Maybe that's the point. Almost certainly she's making it up, he finally says. But now we've got her confession. We can use it against her. Davy's eyes are still rocketing back and forth twixt me and his pa.
You mean you're gonna ask her some more?
All women are part of the answer, the mayor says, if only in sympathy. We need to know what she thinks. We need to know what she knows. Davy looks back at the woman, still panting against the frame.
I don't get it, he says.
When they send her back to prison, I say, all the other women will know what happened to her. Quite, says the mayor, putting a hand briefly on my shoulder, almost like affection. When I don't move, he takes it away. They'll know what's in store for them if they don't answer. And that way, we'll find out what we need to know from whoever knows it. The bomb last night was a resumption of aggression, the start of something larger. We need to know what their next move is going to be. Davy's still looking at the woman.
What about her?
She'll be punished for the crime she confessed to, of course, the mayor says, carrying on talking when Davy tries to interrupt with the obvious. And who knows? Maybe she really does know something. He looks back up through the mirror. There's only one way to find out.
I want to thank you for your help today, Mr. Hammer says, putting his hand under the woman's chin to lift it. You've been very brave and can be proud of the fight you put up.
He smiles at her, but she won't meet his eye.
You've shown more spirit than many a man I've seen under asking.
He steps away from her, going to a little side table and removing a cloth that's lying on top. Underneath are several shiny bits of metal. Mr. Hammer picks one up.
And now for the second part of our interview, he says, approaching the woman, who starts to scream.
That was, Davy says, pacing around as we wait outside, but it's all he can get out.
That was,
he turns to me.
Holy crap, Todd!
I don't say nothing. Just take the apple I've been saving out of my pocket.